The strategies and tactics that made successful deals and operators over the last 2 years are not the same strategies and tactics that will make successful deals over these next few years. And operators who are not able to adjust their strategies may not be able to follow through for their investors. We're going to dive deep into these ideas, different ways investors need to vet operators in this episode with Catherine Monaco.
This is the Passive Real Estate Strategies Podcast, where we educate career-driven individuals who have tapped out their earning potential, learn about passive real estate investing so you can continue building your wealth without compromising your time or taking on more responsibilities. I'm your host and managing partner at Realm Investors, a multifamily syndication group who has helped multiply millions of dollars for our passive investors. Thanks for tuning in and let's get on with the show.
Hey investors, welcome back to another episode of Passive Real Estate Strategies. Today, I'm sitting down with Catherine Monaco. Now, Catherine and I are great friends. We met a couple of years ago at a conference at this point, been following her journey ever since, and we've kept in great touch. And she is just a wealth of knowledge, and I knew we were missing an opportunity by not having her here. So Catherine is the founder and managing partner in One Street Capital. It's a private equity real estate firm focused on acquiring value-add multifamily properties. And she actually started off as a limited partner and is now a general partner in over 500 units. So Catherine, we're excited to have you finally on the show after all this time.
I can't believe it. We did it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Justin.
Perfect. I want to talk about your experience kind of in your whole investing career. So you have a unique mixture of pretty good experience in both sides. Some people, if they've invested passively, maybe they invested in, you know, one deal and then they got the bug and then they jump into it, you know. So tell us about, you know, how you became a passive investor. Like, what brought you into the world of private investments and how did that interest you?
Yeah, I actually think it's more of a story of how I got into real estate in the first place in general, which was completely by accident. When I was starting my career as a management consultant, I was on the road 4 days a week, sometimes more. And I couldn't really stomach the idea of spending, you know, I lived in a city, so $1,500 plus on rent to be there maybe once or twice a month. It was also the age where you're traveling on weekends and things like that. So I ended up instead purchasing just a small townhome and putting some tenants in it, friends of friends, right? And ended up accidentally house hacking. And once I saw the numbers come back from that and somebody pointed out to me what it was and sort of diverted me to bigger pockets, because that was their term at the time, it was like a whole world opened up and I was just consuming as much education as I can. This is all on the side of a pretty demanding W-2. It continued, like, you know, chip away a little at a time, developed a small single family portfolio in where I live and really just got into real estate and investing that way. And I'm a numbers person. So once you see the numbers come back in, it was a good time, right? This is like the 2000 teens. So like real estate was very strong and powerful and growing, but it really piqued my interest in how I could scale this and do more. And I saw a lot of the benefits of that, which I think, you know, growing up, I had two doctor parents. It was very traditional investing, very traditional money management. They taught us a lot about money, but it was a very traditional narrative. And so that was really the first time I even thought or heard about alternative investing and then the unlocking that through real estate.
Yeah, so many parents have that super traditional mindset of money. I mean, my parents were the same way. And honestly, it's hard to get them to realize, like, hey, there's a whole nother side of the investing world that, like, we used to be reserved really for the elite, like,
correct.
Reasons I think that they don't know about is just the availability of information, right? And the technology now you could download an app and invest fractionally in like 200 units across 10 states. And I mean, it's crazy the access we have now. So you were investing in, like you said, the 20 teens. How have deals changed since then? Like, are you still seeing, you said you're a numbers person. So are you still seeing, you know, similar numbers in the investment properties? Have investments changed? You know, are you maybe leaning more toward depreciation versus cash flow now? Or do you kind of see similar deals? Or how has your criteria changed, if it has at all?
Oh, I feel like it's completely changed. And I would even say probably in the past 24 months, we saw some of the most change. So, you know, when I was first investing in, it was mostly single family. So it's a slightly different market because you're competing against residential buyers. So they're buying with like heart and desire. And, you know, if they're moving from bigger cities where they've had a lot of equity built up. So it's a slightly different valuation game. It's not just straight rent numbers and you know, rent divided by cap rate or NOI divided by cap rate. But so used to be, as the growth in the market I was in for single family homes, the rents were going up, but the value of the homes were going up much, much, much faster. And so the numbers actually stopped making sense in single family homes where I was. And so the option was, do I go try to do this in a different city where I am not ingrained, don't have my team, don't have my market, or do I find some alternative ways to still participate in real estate? I did some flipping. Like, I've kind of done everything just trying to find my path in the real estate market. But I do wish I knew about syndications and passive investing earlier. I also couldn't at all tell you where I learned about them. But to your point, it's sort of an alternative narrative, and it's not something that's commonly known. And I wish I would have known about it, because I think the same dollars invested at the same times, one would have been way more passive and would have the timing of the market, which you could never really time, but just where I was, I would have been, you know, passively making quite a bit of money. So I do wish I knew about it. And that's part of why I'm passionate about other people learning about it, because there are ways to participate in real estate that don't require you to flip houses with a newborn or be a landlord, that I just wish I personally knew about sooner.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same. And that's really what birthed this show was, why haven't I known about this? And I've been, you know, when I was 18, I was selling real estate. So I've been in the real estate game since I was 18. And really, it even took me a long time since then to learn about this. And, you know, the same feedback as most people who invest in really anything, but especially real estate. I wish I knew about it sooner. I would have just started sooner. Like, there's no deal that's worth it. Like, no, I'll take time. So yeah, I think that that's a huge important part of it. So when you found out about syndications, you invested passively first. How did you meet the people you invested with? What made you comfortable about investing with them in this totally brand new, you know, investment strategy you just heard of, where you're wiring money to somebody and you're like, you know, I hope this works out really well. Like, tell us about that experience. How did you really go from thinking about it to actually completing your first investment?
Sure. So I will answer that directly, but I think it's also important the backdrop that I wasn't necessarily a passive investor first and then turn active. I went into it knowing I wanted to be an active investor and I wanted to be in multifamily. That was always my strategy. It was always where I wanted to be. COVID forced me to pivot there probably sooner than I would have otherwise, which I'm grateful for, because multifamily is a very different game than single family and certainly different than flipping or the other residential pieces. So the path was really, I went into multifamily knowing I wanted to be it. So that involved like getting a mentor, getting as educated as possible, putting myself in the right networks, going to the conferences, like really, really just completely immersing as much as I could in that environment. But what I recognized really early was I have some capital that I can deploy. I was privileged enough to do that. And I think the best way is to really go and do it and see how another operator runs their deals and get sort of the access as a passive investor, because any good operator should be fully transparent with their investors. And I knew enough. I knew which questions I wanted to ask. I knew which numbers I wanted to see. And so it was a really good way to sort of learn as I deployed money along all of the other things I was doing on the side to prepare myself to be a general practitioner. But what I would tell somebody that wants just to be a passive investor is it's still some of the similar motions. You do need to have a minimum amount of education as to what some of the KPIs will be. And then I would get really familiar with the questions you want to ask an operator, because I do think you have to know, like, and trust them, and you need to be really comfortable with how they work. And the type of person they are is not going to make or break deal in the sense of a bad deal or a good deal. Like, the numbers will be there. But I will say, like, the operator really matters. And so just trusting that they're going to have the integrity, the polish, the professionalism, they have systems in place. Like, if you know them as someone with good work ethic that really gets the job done and is a go-getter, like, they're going to take that into the deals that they do. So that's one of the things I looked for as well. And then there's a whole list of, like, things you can ask about the market and the deal and things of that nature. We have a list of things that we recommend people ask. I'm happy to share it with your group, but they exist other places too. It's like knowing what you want to ask before you go in and not being scared to ask it, like taking the little bit of time up front to do that.
Hey, investor, really quickly, I hope you're enjoying the show. If you have topics you want me to cover, questions you want me to answer, or guests who you think would make for a great and educational episode, email me with my email in the show notes. Let's get back to the show.
And so how do people do that, right? Because I feel like interviewing a sponsor or a syndicator is almost like interviewing at a job, or, you know, if anybody who's ever interviewed people, you kind of know, okay, this is the best version of this person. Yeah. Truly know them until you really get into the thick of things. And maybe it's impossible to 100% vet that person until you invested a couple of times. That, you know, that's very realistic to assume. But what kind of things at least made you comfortable with that first? Because I know you said you went into it knowing, hey, I want to eventually be a general partner. But at the same time, it's still your money, your investment. And at some point, you also thought of it as, hey, this is also my investment. I want to make sure it's in good hands. Like, what criteria did you have, at least for yourself, that said, hey, when I invest with this person, I need these check marks checked off, and this is what I'm looking for. Like, what did that checklist look like?
Yeah, great. So for me, it was somebody that had a commitment to asset management, right? So, which I think we're going to see more and more as the industry changes and the deals get harder, that how important asset management is. But again, in the teen, like, you know, late 2010s, early 2020s, a lot of people weren't really focused on asset management because kind of every deal was going up and the rising tide lifts all boats. So I wanted somebody that was really committed to asset management because these are long-term holds, you know, 2, 3, 5, 7 years sometimes. So like, we're going to go through cycles where operations really matter. That was one. The other thing was, I did want someone that I looked at investor presentations. I asked for, what are you sharing with investors monthly, and how they present that information, how clear it is. Again, I have a management consultant background, so I'm really specific how you present to people and the story you tell. And again, it's not that you can't be really good at real estate if you don't have a great presentation, but it is a signal of how you do things, right? How attention to detail you are. Are you just slopping together an investor presentation, or is it very polished and thoughtful? And so those are some of the like signals you can look for. You could ask for underwriting. I think a good operator would share it. But if you're just starting out, you may not know all the ticks and ties on that.
Yeah.
I would say four things I'd ask about are rents, because that's a really big lever, and how they got to their rent comparables and what they expect their rent increases to be. If they're, you know, anything above right now, I would say anything above 3%, I would be wary of. But if you're in like 8, no, run away. Like, no market I would be comfortable underwriting that for the next 5 years. Debt is an important question, how they intend to finance it and what sort of provisions they have around it. And then you can look at things like, what is the percentage of your expense to your NOI? What's their business plan? Those are some of the big things I would ask. Again, to your point, if you're new and you don't really know what the quote right answers are, it is a little bit more about how they answer. And right. In that sense, what I recommend is maybe interviewing 3 or 4 operators, because you won't know if their answers are right, but you will know comparatively how they're they're answering compared to others. So they're, you know, some are going to get caught. Of the 4, this one was very polished and she knew everything, versus this one was, he was flying more by the seat of his pants. And then you can make decisions as well.
Yeah. I love that, because a lot of times these things, you can have a very informal presentation and I've seen investor, not presentations, but reports in all different types. I've seen people make videos, or it's just a bulleted email, or it's a real presentation they put together. And all across those different types, there's great, average, and poor operators. And your results aren't tied to it, but it's just something that you consider or think of. You know, if you're going to hire somebody, are they polished, or are they, you know, you're kind of making judgments based on what you have. Then I want to go back to what you said about, you want to have somebody who's focused on asset management, because that's something that we've been about too over the past, you know, year, is this is the decade of the asset manager. We just got out of the years of the acquisitions person, where all you needed to do was find a deal. There was tons of cash, so even raising money was not a big skill set that was really needed. There was tons of cash, and you could just buy a deal and it would go up. It would run itself. Managers didn't really have to work that hard on it. Like, everything just worked well. And now we're going into the age of the asset manager. So what does that mean when somebody is focused on asset management? Like, are you looking for specific tasks they do? Are you looking at, because again, historical performance, especially over the last few years, may not be an indicator.
I actually think it's not. And so for me, if someone says, oh, we have an average IRR of 22%, and it's not, it doesn't tell me anything. What I would ask on that point is, what was your projected exit cap? And if you projected you were going to exit at a 6 cap and you exited at a 3, 22% IRR is not that impressive. It means, you know, it means the market bailed you and the market gave you that. And I'm not, I wouldn't knock anybody. I mean, success is success, but to your point, 100% track record means a lot less to me these days than it did, than it would have 5 or 6 years ago. Because the past 5 years, really everybody can say they have a good track record. I mean, if you had a deal fail in the past couple of years, you were really struggling. There's like something that went very wrong there. So when I say asset management, like one of the things I would specifically ask about is what sort of scaffolding they put around managing the property. So do they have a set agenda with their property manager and things that they go over every week? Do they have a KPI dashboard? And what are their KPIs? And to me, it's, I would know what KPIs I'm looking for, but again, putting myself in the seat of maybe a newer, less seasoned investor, it's not really about like, oh, do they have the exact perfect KPIs, but it's that they have KPIs and that they run and are tracking something at the property and know what they're looking for in trends and know when they're talking to their property manager and who's running their CapEx budget and what types of strategies they're looking for and how often they're checking in. So to me, it's a little bit asking about their process of asset management and really drilling into what that looks like. Maybe even asking for, you know, a sample asset manager report or a sample agenda that they'd go over with their PM. Again, it's less about what they show you, but more about, can they produce something? Do they even have they even thought about it? I mean, there are people that, and I literally can't believe this, do not have weekly calls with their property manager team. Just don't have it. Don't have a structured agenda for that, or don't know what they're talking about when they meet with them. And those are big red flags to me in terms of how you start to suss out who might actually be a good asset manager and or even have experience and commitment to it versus I've just made money because I was a great acquisition specialist and could raise money in a time when money wasn't hard to raise, right? So that's some of the ways I would suss that out.
I love that too, because it's about the process. And like you said,
completely
right or wrong process necessarily, there's different styles. And, you know, maybe some people, they can make it up with experience and they say, hey, I don't need weekly because I've worked with this manager for 20 years. So we have a different style. And okay, maybe that's okay for you. So, you know, it's not right or wrong. It's just, hey, what is the process? Or are you just making this up as you go?
Exactly. It demonstrates thoughtfulness that they've been thoughtful and have a strategy around how they're going to manage this asset.
Yeah, I love that. And so, you know, if you're not vetting that team properly, you know, what are some, I don't know if you've either experienced this or heard people who've experienced, you know, deals that have either gone sideways or south, or, you know, what kind of things can happen if you're not quite vetting that manager out? Like, what have you seen or what kind of things can people expect as like, hey, this is a really serious part of what you need to do. Like, and here are the consequences if you don't.
Yeah, completely. So I said this earlier, I think with the change in the market, you know, a lot of deals were done in the past year to 2 years that were tight, right? There was bidding wars. People thought that rents were only going to go up. I think there's some truth to that. We still have a supply demand issue in multifamily, but what we're going to see is bad debt is going to increase. Tenants are going to be a lot less able to pay if rents continue to go up. There is a new, you know, there's a lot of discussion on like new constructions coming online. So there's probably going to be changes in net absorption and things of that nature that will, deals that were underwritten to 1 to 2 years ago, I think are seeing a lot of headwinds that maybe didn't expect. And what that shows up in a subpar operator, especially someone that's not committed to asset management, is they're a little bit asleep at the wheel, meaning like you do have to trust your property manager completely, but property managers have a great variance. And it's not even just like, is this property management company have good experience, but it's actually like your manager on site. Well, we also have a labor shortage. So the quality of property managers may have gone down, not everywhere, but like there's a lot of variability in who actually is on your site. And if you don't have that asset management scaffolding and aren't prepared to step in the face of headwinds, you maybe won't even realize that your property's struggling until it's way later than it needs to be. And so now you've lost time. You might have to replace the property manager. You're digging out of a hole. You've got tenants that maybe aren't happy. You aren't raising rents to bail you out. The market certainly isn't going to bail you out. So selling might not be an option. And so I think when, you know, it's not always all of these headwinds coming together, but really show the operators that maybe don't have the system structures people in place to be really crisp with their asset management. And even just tracking trends, if you can't track what's going on in the bigger portfolios too, it's a problem. Like you really have to have a pulse of what's going on at your properties as a lead operator. And And when these headwinds come in, it's going to expose maybe some groups that haven't. We're already starting to see it. There's like chatter in the market about that. So
yeah. And I think it's exciting to be in the buyer's seat right now too, or to be an investor at any level of the game, because we're seeing disruption. And like, now is your time. Like, now is the chance. Everybody who is saying, oh, I'm waiting for the market to cool down, or I'm waiting for the crash to come, you know, like, this is likely the closest you're going to get these next coming years. So I love the conversation. I think it's been super, super valuable. You mentioned a few resources earlier in the show, so I want to circle back to those. You know, what kind of resources was that? I think you said it was some vetting questions. And how can people reach out to you, and who can get in touch?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're, all of our contact information, schedule a call, whatever you want, is on our website, One Street Capital. It's spelled out, so W-O-N-E. One Street Capital. And then also on that site is a link to download our 50 questions you should ask before investing in a deal. Whether it's our deal, somebody else's deal, I really recommend, I want people to use that as a cheat sheet. Because again, you might not know what the right answers to those questions are for you. But if you ask them to four different people, you will have a really great sense of who that person is compared to other people you could be investing with. And so please go to our website, download it, use it as you invest. I think the team and the operators are going to be more critical than the deals coming up, to your point. And so I really encourage people to take that step.
Awesome. So we're going to put that link in the show notes so you can access it right there. And while you're there, of course, if you haven't already, make sure you download our free ebook, The Definitive Guide to Passive Real Estate Strategy. Kathleen, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Justin. I'm so glad we could make it happen.
Well, that's it for today's show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And if you're looking to learn more about passive real estate investments, make sure you head to our show notes and download our free ebook, The Definitive Guide to Passive Real Estate Strategies, where we reveal the ins and outs of the truly passive ways to invest in real estate. We'll see you on the next episode.